longing for my friends to stop dying. They'd seen my excitement for the battles I'd found in the belt of the nowhere. Stay, the Delvers pled with me. Stay and do not pass Shorehold. We will stop. Stay, I blinked, becoming aware of the space around me. I was hanging on to Hesho's ship, looking down into those portals of light that were his eyes. Stay. It wasn't a word, but an impression of me stopping my journey on the Path of Elders, of staying at Shorehold, or moving back out into the belt, but never going farther inward than the superiority base, of not continuing the Path of Elders or entering the Lightburst. What about my friends? I sent them. The people in the somewhere. In truce with you, we leave them alone. We ignore the noise. That particular use of noise indicated Braid and Winsick. It wasn't as strong a promise as I'd have preferred. It felt like, from the way their minds worked, if they were pulled into our realm, they'd still attack. But they would start ignoring Winsick. Stay, the Delvers repeated, the white fading from Hesho's eyes. Stay away, and we promise truce. With that, the light vanished completely, leaving me clinging to the outside of a frozen ship containing one very confused Kitson. Chapter 35. I slumped into the cockpit of my ship. That had been a lot. A lot to think about, a lot to feel, a lot to remember. Scud, I remembered. Gran-Gran, Mother, Rig, even Jorgen, though the faces of my other friends remained vague.
I told you that I understood crazy, Chet said. I was wrong. Thank you for the masterclass.
Spensa, Embot said, that was interesting of you. Do you want a list of the emotions I'm feeling right now?
I get the sense they'd mostly be variations on frustration and bafflement.
You'd be right, he replied.
I'll pass then, I said, as I closed the cockpit. Come on, you two. Climbing out on my wing in the middle of a battlefield? You've both seen me do worse.
Which is why I didn't call it strange, Embot said. Strange implies odd or out of sequence with your normal behavior. Still, what the hell?
I grinned. Wow, you use that curse perfectly, Embot.
It's the emotions, he said. I now understand the sense of frustration everyone else feels with you. It dovetails perfectly into exasperation, which makes me finally understand why it is people swear at you so much.
That's great, I said.
I know. Also, what the hell, Spensa?
Hesho was possessed by a Delver, I said.
Yes, Chet explained that, he said. So you went closer?
They're afraid of me, Embot. I realized it. And it just felt right.
Right isn't a feeling. Trust me, I've been practicing. Weren't you listening?
Right is a feeling for me, I said. At least this time when I got out of the cockpit, I didn't end up floating around in a vacuum. Chet, how much of that did you hear?
Not a lot, he said. My cytonic communication talents are not as powerful as yours.
Well, I said, immortality and the ability to cytonically echolocate are both also cool.
I didn't say they weren't, he replied. I did have enough skill to sense you in pain and their attack. I tried to feed you memories of yourself. It appears to have helped. After that, they left, though I couldn't sense why.
I should tell him, I thought. But the Delver's parting thoughts, stay, truce, haunted me. I first wanted to think about what it all meant. Embot, I said, please open a comm line to Hesho. He sighed, but complied. Hey, I said. How are you feeling?
I meditate upon the emptiness that is my past, Hesho said softly, and about how, despite it being blank, I know you were part of it. We were friends?
Yes, I said.
Was I the leader of a pirate force?
He asked. Not exactly. Why do you ask? We floated together, but fortunately, the flashes of buildings and other junk entering the nowhere had stopped. Much of it, the chunks with the clivity stone at least, drifted around us. Lazy, almost serene, like we were underwater in a vast ocean following some terrible storm.
When the cannonaders took me captive,
Hesho explained in his deep, authoritative voice,
I immediately tried to seize command of their organization. I felt I should be their leader. They thought I was cute and attempted to use me as a mascot instead. I disabused them of this behavior.
I grinned, trying to imagine how that had looked. What did a tiny fox man, a quarter meter tall, do to disabuse pirates?
Eventually, he said, I settled into my role as an expert pilot and followed Vlep. But something about it felt wrong. There were embarrassing holes in my piloting skill. So I wondered, perhaps I was a leader of a group of pirates who maybe hadn't flown in a long time.
You were commander of a ship, Hesho, I explained. Your kind can crew a small capital ship that isn't much bigger than a starfighter for the rest of us. You at least occasionally piloted it yourself, which is why you learned some skills, but you had crew working things like the shields for you.
Ah, he said. That thought, it wears a path in my mind, champion. Light sparks like stone and steel. My ship,
the swims against the current in a stream reflecting the sun? Yes.
I see it like a faded picture exposed to the elements,
Hesho said,
but I can remember my home. The feeling of it warm on my face and fur, yes. Being with you is good for me. I will remain with you, champion, and serve you as your bodyguard until you return me to who I was.
You're my friend. You don't need to.
I am your sworn companion,
he said firmly.
And you, my feudal lord. Do not object to this arrangement. It is done.
I sighed. I'd been about to explain to him that he was an emperor, but perhaps it wasn't wise to give him more ammunition. Only Hesho could become someone's servant using a forcible imperial declaration. Still, I could do worse than having a dedicated gerbil fox samurai following me about. And it was encouraging that Hesho could remember the name of his ship now. I stuck him with a light lance and towed him up through the debris toward where the others were waiting. As we flew, I grappled with what the Delvers had told me. They want me to stop following the Path of Elders, I thought, which is an obvious sign that I should continue. Yet, if I could make them break their pact with Winsic. It was a compelling offer, assuming I could trust them. I found myself conflicted and determined that I shouldn't make a decision in the middle of a battle. I put the thoughts aside for a moment and emerged from the biggest clot of debris to find most of the other pirates lined up in two rows of deactivated ships, maintained by the tugs that would eventually reactivate them. The remaining active ships were a little ways off, also in two groups. As I arrived, a group of ships peeled off from the enemy faction. Vlep, commander of the cannonade pirates, and a few of his crew were leaving. Apparently, seeing me defeat their best pilot a second time meant they'd had enough.
Give us immunity, Peg, Vlep's voice said over the comm. Let me take my downed ships and I'll leave.
What? Another voice shouted, in what I thought was the Heklo language.
Our deal. You should know better than to make deals with pirates, Lorne,
Vlep said.
What say you, Peg?
Done,
Peg said immediately. Other members of the pirates who had joined with us grumbled, but Peg was making the correct decision. Vlep and his traitors weren't our ultimate goal. Without them, there would only be 10 working ships on the superiority side. We had 13, and it was obvious which was the more skilled force. Vlep hovered over to try to attach a light lance to Hesho's ship, However, Hesho's voice came on the comm.
I have been bested a second time, he said, and in the name of honor, I have chosen to join the new champion as her sworn companion.
Vlep cursed softly.
You would so easily break with your allies, Dark Shadow.
I have made no oaths, Hesho said. You are not my liege. Indeed, your treatment of me when I first arrived is among the only memories I hold. Be glad I warned you of my shift in allegiance. We are now enemies. Should we meet again, I shall reveal to you the consequences of my anger.
Vlep retreated without responding, following the others off the battlefield. I joined the line of active pirate ships facing down the small group of superiority forces.
All right, Lorne, Peg said over a wide broadcast. You want to just surrender now?
You know I can't do that, his voice replied.
They're never going to let you out of here, Lorne, Peg said. They don't care about you. Why are you still loyal?
You know they have my family.
So we squeeze them, Peg said. We withhold their acclivity stone until they agree to send through your family. They pretend they have the power in this relationship, but so long as we own this place and make it our home, they lose every bit of bargaining power they have.
There was silence on the line for a moment, and I leaned forward, hands on my controls. We could end this easily, with the odds in our favor. Peg waited, though, no signal to attack. That Heklo voice spoke again.
You promise to do this for me? He asked. For anyone they're holding. You'll get them brought through so we can be together?
My word and oath, Peg said. But you have to turn the facility over to me. All security codes, all access.
Silence again. Finally, the Heklo continued.
There are a few people among the base security officers who I'm nearly certain are superiority agents sent to watch me. We'll have to move quickly and isolate them until we can make sure.
Shouldn't be too hard, Peg said. I've got a plan. Do we have a deal?
We have a deal.
Chapter 36. A short time later, Shiver, Deliz, and I flew in low toward the superiority base, escorting Peg, her sons, and Lorne. The rest of the unfrozen pirate vessels formed an ominous presence higher in the sky. Shorehold turned out to be bigger than I'd expected. The campus sprawled across an unusually large and thick fragment marked by hills and rocky crags. I counted four separate acclivity stone quarries, each attended by a variety of modern machines. The central section of the base comprised about a dozen buildings, and while it wasn't large in comparison to the crowded star site, it was almost as big as the entire DDF headquarters. After making certain their large anti-aircraft guns were offline, control transferred to Peg, we landed and let her and Lorne disembark. Curious workers stopped on the flight deck to watch, though Lorne, the base commander, waved a winged arm to calm them. Together, Lorne, Peg, and her two sons entered a nearby building, the base security structure. Inside, she could be given full and permanent control over the base, with her own overrides and passwords. After a tense few minutes, during which I stood ready to blast open the wall and try to grab Peg if something went wrong, a call to quarters went out on the superiority channel. Martial law was declared. Peg's sons prowled out of the building a moment later, armed and armored, with Lorne guiding them. They'd secure the few people on base he thought would be trouble. Quick as that, it was done. I hadn't expected there to be trouble. The real fight had been the one with starfighters. We'd left most of the superiority pilots in their ships, which were locked up without friendly tugs to unfreeze them, guarded by trustworthy pirate flights. Still, I remained on watch, hovering, for another half hour, as Peg and her sons took full command of the base. Finally, as the word came that all was clear, some of the pirates began to land on the flight pad. Hesho settled down beside us in his own ship, but didn't move to leave it. I glanced back at Chet. What do you think? I asked.
It's looking good, he said. But if anything were to go wrong, this would be the time, when we're flat-footed and assume we've won.
Agreed. So the two of us, paranoid as we were, waited another good half hour. But it seemed that the final stage of Peg's plan had indeed gone off without a hitch. As the pirates unloaded from their ships, Peg's voice came over our comms and the flight deck loudspeakers.
No looting, she ordered. This is our home now. Regular base personnel have been confined to quarters. If you encounter a locked room, leave it alone. But you're free to investigate the place. Pick an empty room in the barracks to claim as your own, all that fun stuff. Just be warned. I get word of you harming base personnel or breaking stuff, and I'll be upset.
Most of the pirates made for the barrack building. I asked Hesho to stay put and keep watch while Chet and I climbed free. Then Chet pointed toward a large set of doors ahead of us, the shipping warehouse, where the portal would be. You still here? I sent to my pin. I'd confirmed upon coming close that it was here. I got back a contented, quiet impression. Hiding now, seek me later. Okay. Well, I had a job to do at the moment anyway. Chet used some controls to open the large bay doors of the warehouse, revealing a vast room with a tall ceiling. It felt vacuous, despite the other end being piled high with raw acclivity stone waiting to be shipped to the Superiority. On the wall closest to us was the portal. It was much larger than the others I'd seen in here, covering a square that looked about 6 meters on each side. Chet and I stood there staring at it for a good long while. As I started toward it, Chet put his hand on my shoulder.
Miss Nightshade, he said. Might I inquire what the Delvers told you before they left?
They offered me a truce, I admitted. They want me to proceed no farther inward than Shorehold. The next step on the path would take us that way, wouldn't it?
Almost assuredly.
Well, they don't want me doing that. They made a promise. If I stay here, they'll leave me alone.
And your people in the somewhere?
They implied they'd halt attacks, though it wasn't clear if they understood completely what that means. They did promise to stop listening to Winzik and Braid, the two people they'd earlier made a deal with on the enemy's side. Chet sighed and settled down on a box. He suddenly looked old to me, his mustache drooping and in need of a wax, his skin wan. He gave me a smile, but something about him seemed worn out. And when he spoke, some of the facade, the persona, had faded, leaving a normal man.
That's a good offer, he said. Better than I ever thought they'd make. They're frightened.
That's what I decided as well, I said, pacing before him in the cavernous warehouse, helmet under my arm. Which makes me think I should refuse the offer. They're desperate. I should keep doing what I'm doing because it's worrying them.
Except?
Except, ostensibly, I came in here to find a way to stop them. And now I've found it. Shouldn't I take it? Isn't it my duty to at least try this? Chet nodded slowly. I paced back the other direction. How trustworthy are they, do you suppose?
I'm not sure I can say, he replied. I do get the sense that they live in the moment, but I know they also never change. So as long as they continue to be afraid of you, they should continue wanting the same thing, which means they'd persist in upholding any promise they made.
That's not as strong as I'd like, I said. But yeah, that makes sense. They don't have honor. It's not a thing they even comprehend. And they are backing out of a promise they made to Winzik. They could do the same to me. I paced back the other way, arms folded. This felt like a lot to put on one person still in her teens. How did I decide what could be the fate of not merely my people, but the entire galactic civilization? It feels like I should at least try them out, I said. If I can remove the Delvers from the war, Scud, it would mean so much. It's more than any pilot, no matter how skilled, could ever hope to accomplish. But if I take their deal, what then? Do I go back to the somewhere? How? Sneak through this portal into a superiority base?
You'd need to remain a threat to the Delvers, Chet said, always on the cusp of doing the thing they're afraid you'll do. That is the best chance at keeping them honest.
I nodded, though my stomach fell a little. That meant remaining in the nowhere, at least until the war against the superiority was won. Could I really do that? I paced back the other direction. I worry that this is the wrong time to make concessions to the Delvers, I said. Beyond that, our biggest advantage against Winzik is the fact that his coup is still relatively new. He's securing power, Jorgen says, and doesn't have full control yet. This seems the best time for me to press forward, continue learning about my powers, exploit the fact that our enemy's balance of power is unstable.
A difficult position, Chet said. Could I maybe offer you another option? I don't want to complicate the issue further, but I find I must speak.
I glanced across at him, sitting on the box. He gave me a smile, not an overly cheerful, toothy explorer's smile, a tired, hopeful smile. What? I asked.
Come with me, Spencer, he said, and explore the nowhere.
I froze in place.
As I've been wandering alone, he said, I've started wishing I could pass on some of what I know. Wishing for a student, someone who shared my enthusiasm, my love of all things new and exciting. What if we didn't continue on the path of elders? What if we turned away and just went off on our own? We could see what the farthest reaches hold. I've heard of distant fragments with creatures that sound strikingly similar to dragons. I've heard of water fragments full of caverns with air pockets, connected by transparent stone.
Some of his old boisterousness returned, and his voice changed, more clipped, with a faint accent as he stepped up to me.
Spencer, he said, we have an entire galaxy in microcosm, worlds to explore. We could even return back here to Shorehold on occasion, scratch that flying itch, spend time with the Broadsiders. Why, you could teach me to fly again. I show you a galaxy, and you show me who I used to be. A pilot, yes, and presumably friends to an AI. Me, ha! Wouldn't that be incredible, Spencer? Wouldn't it be amazing? We could watch the Delvers, see that they don't attack your friends. As you guessed, they'll be much more likely to keep their word if you're within striking distance of continuing your quest. You wouldn't be giving it up, no. Merely a delay, a little time off to travel this wondrous place.
It hit me like a punch to the stomach. During my travels in here, the exploration and the fighting alike, something had been building in me. A sense of disconnect between the person I was becoming and the person I'd always imagined myself becoming. In that moment, I was shocked physically by how badly I wanted to stay. I really loved it here. Exploring the belt, going on grand adventures, and beyond that, fighting in the sky without the stress of losing those I loved. Being a hero, the best pilot in literally the entire universe. It sounds so nice, I said to Chet. Exploring, dueling, like
a story,
he said softly. I nodded. Why do we remember the stories, Chet, but not our families? Why is that?
I don't know, he said. I wish I did.
Together, we turned to face the portal looming on the far wall. When I'd joined the DDF as a pilot, I'd imagined glorious battles and storybook heroism. I'd imagined new worlds to conquer. Instead, I'd found pain. Friends dying, people struggling at the end of their stretched thin nerves. I'd found complications, anger, fear. I'd discovered I wasn't a hero, not like in the stories. But here, I could be that. and it felt so, so very right for me to stay and claim it. This place sang to me like beautiful music from old Earth. It vibrated my soul. Didn't I deserve to stay? Hadn't I done enough? I'd saved detritus from the bomb and then from the Delver. Wasn't that enough for one woman? And now I had the chance to escape into a story, all the while providing a vital service to my people. I traded my future in the somewhere for holding back the destructive force of the Delvers. It was perfect. Except, Jorgen, my friends, could I? Chet, I said, you've always been afraid of the Path of Elders. Why?
I worry that if I walk it, he said, I'll stop being myself.
Why?
Because every path we walk changes us, Spencer,
he answered.
This one more than most. Please, just think about my offer. Let's not rush into this. There's no harm in taking a few hours, is there?
No, I said. No, there's not. He squeezed my shoulder in thanks, then bowed, something I don't think anyone non-Kitson had ever done to me before, and quietly withdrew. I sat down on a box, looking at the portal. It felt wrong to be here and not discover what it had inside it, yet I hesitated. It felt like I should know before I continued. Scud, was I really thinking about turning away now? Yes, I was. I remembered the pure joy of sailing across that ocean fragment with Embot and Chet. I remembered the thrill of discovering ruins that humans had built. I had loved the fights against Hesho, at least before buildings began appearing around me. Being here was living an adventure, while being in the somewhere was, it was about pain. And Scud, deep down, I realized I was so tired. I'd been running since I could remember, dashing from disaster to disaster, desperately working to get into flight school, fixing Embot in secret, being a double agent on Starsight, confronting the Delver. It had worn me thin. Yet in here I'd found wonder, adventure, and excitement. I sat there for a time, until footsteps scraping stone made me spin around. A large figure lumbered my direction, wearing a plumed hat. Peg smiled at me as she stepped up, a gun slung over her thick shoulder.
The base is ours, she told me, well and truly. I almost can't believe it.
You earned it, Peg, I said. That was an amazing plan you put together.
Thank you,
she said, grinning. She nodded toward the portal.
Find what you wanted?
Both yes and no, I said softly. I'm honestly not sure yet.
I heard that you might be staying.
I glanced at her, frowning. In turn, she gestured toward the top of the wall.
Cameras,
she said.
I saw you two going this way, and had to make sure you didn't accidentally open the portal and reveal what we'd done to the superiority. I'm sorry to not give you and Chet privacy, but this is too valuable an asset for that.
Right. Security officer. I tried not to feel offended. I mean, I hadn't asked her to leave us alone, and she had a point about the portal.
What would it take, Peg said to me, to get you to stay with the Broadsiders?
I sighed. I don't know, Peg, I said. This is all a little overwhelming right now.
Fair enough, she replied.
Grow Igandals in thought. It is a good time.
While you do, let me ask you something. Do you know why I was willing to come in here when no one else was? I knew the truth of what the superiority was doing here. Not letting people out. Forced labor in another dimension. I came anyway. You curious to know why?
Yes, actually.
Out there, I was a killer,
Peg said, her voice softer.
And here was a new life. A fresh life. I didn't know I was pregnant with my boys. That might have changed my mind. All I wanted was an escape from my old life, and coming in here offered it. Things out there are messy, Spin, Everybody arguing, fighting, killing. But a lot of the things they argue over, well, they don't matter in here. We don't need food, and there's plenty of space. Politics, ideology, those are things we can make up for ourselves in here. We can make this place whatever we want it to be.
She turned, waving toward the complex.
I've known for years now that if I could just get this base, grab it by the throat and start building it up as a home, not a prison, we could make it wonderful. We could make a society. I want you to help me do that.
But Chet wants me to go exploring with him, I said.
I know, and I think that's an excellent idea,
Peg said.
I'd want to put you on that kind of assignment frequently between training sessions. Do you know what is out there, past the empty stretches?
No.
I don't either, Peg said. It's hard to fly that far. When you hit the enormous gap between fragments, it starts eating up your ashes, and you risk losing yourself. But I'll tell you this. There are three other superiority mining bases in the nowhere. I was given that information when I was applying for this job.
Only four total, I said, for the entire superiority?
Exactly, Peg said. And this is the largest, which is why I'm certain they'll meet my demands. But I'm also worried. If they use those other three bases and somehow load them with enough reality ashes to cross the empty stretches, I could still get invaded. Plus, Vlep is still out there, a real danger. I need fighters. More importantly, I need trainers of fighters. Then I need someone crazy enough to go explore, to discover how to cross the vast gaps.
She looked back at me.
You are the right person, Spin. The somewhere is a mess, but the nowhere can be something better. I want you to help me make it so.
Scud, I didn't need this too. Not after what Chet had said. I knew they hadn't coordinated it. Peg was just acting at a convenient moment. I felt double-teamed regardless. Triple-teamed, actually. Chet, Peg, and my own heart.
I reserved one of the officer suites for you, Peg said. You don't have to make any decisions. But for now, why not go grab a shower and relax a little? Think over your options. You can at least stay there until we locate Shorehold's reality icon, and I can give you those ashes I promised.
I considered. And Scud, she was right. I needed some time. Plus, a shower sounded so nice. I called Embot and Hesho to let them know, then went to the room Peg indicated. It was an enormous suite of the ridiculous type. Unfortunately, I didn't get to the shower. I made the mistake of lying down on the bed first. And after the fighting, the chaos, the tension of my decision, I just found myself unable to stay awake. And so, I drifted off. Interlude. As I slept, someone tried to talk to me. I wanted to talk to him. Something stopped me. It was another cloud like before, like the prison that Braid had put around me, though it felt different, like a march set to different words. Same sounds, new song. I fought through it, but no matter which way I turned, I got lost. I tried telling myself that none of this was real, that there were no places here, nowhere to go. I merely had to make myself be somewhere else. It was hard to think through this fog.
Spensa?
Jorgen's voice.
Spensa, I can feel you.
I can't feel you.
You seem distant. Why? What is wrong?
I'm lost.
I can barely hear you. What was that?
Lost.
Spensa, things are tough right now, hi. Everyone is looking to me for answers. I could use someone to talk to.
He needed me. That need made the haze thinner, and I thought I saw the way. I moved toward it, but each footstep was sluggish. I was lost. Hadn't I been warned about that? But I was tired, just so tired. Moments later, I was asleep. Part 5. Chapter 37. I awoke to luxury. I didn't think I'd slept a full night, but then again, I didn't know what night really meant in here. I yawned, feeling unsettled by my dreams. As I considered, I looked to the side and found Hesho sitting cross-legged on an oversized chair right next to the bed.
"I watched you in your sleep," he said, "to make certain you were safe."
Awesome. I mean, yeah, I realized some people would have thought that was unsettling. Not me. Alien bodyguard watching for assassins? Scud. How could a girl not sleep more soundly under those circumstances? "How long was I out?" I asked.
"An hour," he said. "I wrote the time down to remember."
"Clever," I said to him. "I'm going to grab a shower. Maybe you wait outside while I do?"
"I shall be on the balcony," he said. "The view is excellent. I shall also send for the machine who thinks. He wished to be notified if you rose."
A short time later, I walked out onto the balcony wearing a freshly laundered jumpsuit, my hair still drying. Hesho sat cross-legged on the floor here in his warrior's coat and trousers, a small sword across his lap as he meditated. Embot's drone hovered out here too. He'd sent it up, interrupting me in the shower, actually. I hadn't been too indignant. I mean, in the past, I'd cleansed literally inside his cockpit, so it's not like he hadn't seen me in that state. I'd sent the drone out here anyway. It didn't contain his entire consciousness. He'd simply decided to start using it as, well, a drone was normally used. I settled down on the floor of the balcony, my back to the glass door separating it from the bedroom, and looked out, over the red rock hills, inward, toward the light burst. That blazing expanse appeared like an explosion, frozen mid-detonation, a gigantic sphere of light that felt as if it should be consuming all nearby. It was distant, but closer than it had ever been. I'd assumed it would be my ultimate destination in here. It was, after all, a way out. I'd crossed pirate territory. I'd helped subdue the superiority. Now only one thing stood between me and the lightburst, the region of the belt called No Man's Land, the place where the Delvers were strongest. My short nap had only muddled things more. I remembered Jorgen's voice. I couldn't leave him, could I? It wouldn't be permanent, I thought. Just a short break. A year or so. Exploring, fighting, keeping the Delvers away. But in here, years seemed to have an eerie way of becoming decades. I felt as if I were on the edge of a cliff. I had to be honest with myself. The offer from the Delvers wouldn't have been enough to keep me here, not alone. I had no reason to trust them, and every reason to press forward while my enemies were unstable. The desire to stay had far more to do with my own heart and the emotions I felt growing there, emotions that I couldn't help but see as cowardice. I tried to imagine the heroes from the stories laughing at my sudden indecision. But strangely, I instead pictured them understanding. I'd been born into war. I'd barely had a childhood. My father had died in the fighting before my 8th birthday. My heart had been flayed by losing companions while flying, though I could no longer remember their names or faces. I'd never had any other options in life. It was fight or be destroyed. But now I'd seen that wasn't the only way to live. It was the first time in my life I'd actually had a chance to escape the war. I had to consider it. How could I not? Neither Hesho nor Embot spoke for a time. The three of us merely sat in silence. We were like an audience for one of the military parades back home, except our entertainment was the distant, incredible burst of light. "Is that what a sun is like?" I finally asked.
"No,"
Hesho said.
I close my eyes, and the light batters my eyelids, but there is no warmth to accompany it. It is like the ghost of a son, the corpse of one, left behind after all the heat has fled.
It is a little like a son, Embot said. So far, Hesho had taken his presence as normal, though I'd cautioned the Kitsun not to speak of him to others. Only very wrong at the same time. It is much smaller than one, for example.
That small? I asked. From how close we were, the light burst took up a good chunk of the horizon.
For a star, yes, Embot said. That sphere, gauging by my best readings, is a fraction of the size of Earth's moon. It could perhaps be a neutron star if this were the somewhere, which would make Lord Hesho's metaphor particularly acute. At any rate, it certainly shouldn't be so cold for how much light it releases.
I leaned forward and tried to imagine the feeling of sunlight. The vast majority of my ancestors had lived in a place where warmth came from the sky. I'd never felt so distant from them as I did at that moment, sitting before the strange light of the nowhere, contemplating my cowardice. I'd learned, in my time with Skyward Flight, that I wasn't a coward in the traditional sense. I didn't fear battle. I wouldn't run from danger. But here was a different opportunity, a way to run from the war and even responsibility in their entirety. The Delvers told me, I said softly, that they'd leave me alone if I agreed not to continue on the path of elders. They even implied they'd back out of the deal with Winsick.
Curious, Embot said. Why would they make such an offer?
They're frightened of me, I said. They proposed a truce. They hate my presence in here, but they're willing to tolerate it in order to not escalate our interactions.
And if we continue? Embot asked.
They'll consider that an act of aggression. They'll do everything they can to stop us.
A dilemma, Embot said.
Not if I stay, I whispered. Chet wants me to join him exploring, and Peg wants me to train her people. Both made me offers earlier. I leaned forward, my hands clasped, not looking toward his drone.
How likely are the Delvers to keep a deal? He asked.
That question again. Hard to say, I replied. They're frightened now, but who knows? We have no evidence that they're trustworthy. If Winsick came to me with a similar deal, for example, I'd discard it in a heartbeat.
Curious, Embot said. Spencer, I'll admit I've been thinking of my own dilemma.
I glanced at his drone. What?
My old ship, he explained, had specific circuitry that let me process in the nowhere. That's why I could think fast enough to, well, be me.
But the drone?
Well, do you remember how I talked when you first found me in it?
Slowly, I said, like you were struggling for each word.
I can only assume, he explained, that being in the belt lets me process quickly, regardless of the machinery I inhabit. But my old ship, the one that let me think so well in the somewhere, has been destroyed. I no longer blame you for that, by the way. I'm getting pretty mature, I'd say.
I smiled.
Anyway, he said, if we leave this place, what happens to me? Do I return to thinking like my processors are made of oatmeal?
I don't know, I said. It seems, for a little while at least, that would be inevitable.
I've been thinking about it, he said, for weeks now, and I've decided. I'm willing to go back. We have a war to win. I decided I'd try inhabiting the best computers we had, maybe one on the platforms. I think I'd make a good space station, don't you? If not that, maybe we could steal the schematics that Winsick must have made while disassembling my old ship. Then we could build me a new proper brain. But anyway, I decided that if you went back, I'd go with you. I just thought I should tell you.
Scud. He was braver than I was. I felt ashamed for not noticing the dilemma he faced. This worry must have been bothering him ever since we entered. Some friend I was.
thinking of friends made me sick again at what I was contemplating. How would I ever face Jorgen if I made the decision to stay? A part of me, however, knew I couldn't focus on his needs or M-Bot's decision. I had to decide what I wanted, not choose my future because of what any other person, even Jorgen, would want me to do. For once, I had to think of myself. I glanced at Hesho, wondering if he'd chime in. For now, he continued sitting in his meditative posture, his eyes closed. M-Bot, I said, I've spent my entire life being indoctrinated into the war for detritus. I don't blame anyone, except maybe the Krell, for that. We did what we had to in order to survive, but I'm tired of watching people die, of giving up my future to a war, of living my life with my stress at a constant 10. How much do I owe detritus? How much is one person expected to pay? His drone hovered beside me, silent for long enough that I eventually glanced at it. For once, I wished he were a person so that I could see the disgust in his face. I deserved that for the way I was talking. Instead, he was an AI. I suppose, he said, that makes some sense. I had to be truthful with him. I had to voice it. There's another reason that I want to stay, I said. I love this. I can explore with Chet, and the Broadsiders practically worship me. It's like living in a story. That's all I've ever wanted, M-Bot. I can do that here. I can fly. I can explore. I can fight the superiority. I can spar. Live. That, he said, makes even more sense, knowing you. Lord Hesho? I asked. I could use your wisdom. Wisdom fled me, warrior sister, he said. Wisdom is born of experience, you see, and I have none. I sense wisdom even in that answer, I said to him. Am I a coward for preferring to stay? It's not that I fear dying by continuing, it's merely that you are tired of sacrificing what you want for the good of your people, Hesho said. Yes, I whispered. That is not cowardice, but selfishness, he said. I winced. However, he continued, duty should not be accepted without question. Duty can be a motive, but should not be an excuse. Does your fight uphold honor and virtue? Does it match your moral code? I don't know that I've ever thought about those things, I said. I mean, there was the enemy and there was us. I pointed myself in their direction and let loose. That wasn't strictly true. After living with the enemy, I admitted, I learned it wasn't so simple. I didn't discover that their cause was just, mind you, only that most of them weren't evil. They were merely people, following, by accident, someone who was evil. Excellent, he said. You have left behind the worldview of a child. He cracked an eye. How old are you among your species? A young adult, I said. Then I might question the society that allowed you to persist in such naivety for so long, he said. Among the first lessons a warrior must learn is the knowledge that his immediate enemy, the person he must kill, is just trying to survive. Soldiers are alike, no matter their side. I don't know that anyone among us knew who the enemy were, I said, only that they were trying to destroy us, and I thought you said you didn't remember enough to be wise, Hesho. It seems, he said, you ask the right questions. I do not know why I say these things, simply that they are true. He closed his eyes again. You are not a coward, nor are you selfish for realizing you have options, warrior sister. You cannot be defined by your questions, only by what you do with them. Well, Hesho was the same person, with or without memories. What really frightened me then was that this was who I was. I saw what would happen if I stayed. I would become like Chet. Everyone I knew, even the person I'd been, would fade. I'd remember only the stories, and I'd become more and more like someone who felt she was one of those heroes. I'd forget everything and let the part of me that had always made up boasts take control. In 40 years, I probably wouldn't even remember the fight for detritus or why I'd stayed. But I'd love every minute of it. I stood up and walked to the edge of the balcony, staring out at that great, brilliant white light, but one with a softness to it. It appeared to absorb everything that drew near, merged them with the light. I closed my eyes and searched outward for my father. The reality icon was still nearby. I assumed it was somehow his soul, though I had no real proof. Maybe that was what I wanted to believe. Could I face him, though, with this doubt inside me? I felt him, that emotion that had been guiding me, supporting me all along. Was it really my father? I knew it wasn't Gran-Gran or Jorgen, so was it maybe God? Like spoken of in the Book of Saints? The pin brushed my mind. It welcomed me, wanted me to come to it now. Was I brave enough for that? Wait here, I said to Hesho and Embat. I'll return soon. I walked into the hallway outside my room. Lights shone on decor that felt too soft to me. A brown carpet, walls with patterns on them. I closed my eyes again and rested one hand on the wall, which had an odd texture like paper. I was accustomed to smooth metal or rough rock. I walked along slowly, my eyes closed, seeking that mind, seeking my father. Before, I sent to it, you strengthened my memories of my life on detritus. Can you do that again? Curiosity. Because I need to feel guilty, I thought, so I'll force myself to return. What came back through that mental connection hit me like a shockwave. It wasn't the memories I demanded. It wasn't condemnation. It was permission. A calm, gentle understanding, like a warm breeze through my soul. No words, but meaning. It's all right. Your pain is real. Your passion is real. You can choose. It's all right. The emotion shook me. I sank to my knees, bowing my head. It wasn't what I'd expected, and certainly wasn't what I'd wanted. I needed guilt to propel me, didn't I? Yet the permission was insistent. Yes, there were some who would be sad or angry if I didn't return, but nobody could ever claim I hadn't done my part. The attempt at a truce with the Delvers was plausible enough to accept, and even if it wasn't, well, we shouldn't be required to keep giving until we'd been wrung out. That wasn't love. I could stay. I deserved to stay if I wanted to. That familiar mind wasn't trying to persuade me. It gave me permission to let go, if that was what I truly wanted. I pulled up beside the wall, head bowed against my knees, feeling that warmth flow through me, until I let it flow out of me through tears, like I'd been filled to the brim. I couldn't explain why I was crying. They weren't tears of grief or joy. They were just tears. There's no way to tell how long I sat there, though I don't think the lost time was due to the strange effects of the nowhere. I eventually let it all leak out and came to myself, sitting in that muted hallway, unexpectedly calm. I hadn't made a decision yet, but I did need to hold my pin again. I had to know for certain if it carried my father's soul. Climbing to my feet, I went hunting, connected as if by lightline tether to that other mind. I took the steps at a reckless pace. On the ground floor, I entered a large room with tables almost as long as runways. Scud, was this the mess hall? Those chandeliers looked like they were on fire. The mind was nearby. A few pirates were in the mess hall at the moment, including Maxime and a human who looked vaguely familiar. Had I seen him earlier? He was wearing a symbol of the Long Plank faction. Maxime gave me a friendly wave and I nodded absently, feeling pulled. I walked to the side of the room where, after poking around a little, I found a power outlet that was loose. I pried it off, and behind was a hidden alcove. Inside were two objects, my pin and a small, worn stuffed animal. It looked vaguely like an alien dog from the shape of the face and the paws. Both were surrounded by a scattering of reality ashes. I didn't need a description to know the stuffed animal was the base's icon. How had it gotten here? We hid, my pin said, though more with impressions than words, when the fighting started. Some here would have tried to steal us. Merely seeing the reality ashes immediately made me feel better, more connected to who I'd once been. It's so good to hold you, I said to the pin. Thank you. Thank you so much for your help. In response, I heard a distinctive and happy fluting sound coming from the pin. Chapter 38. Doomslug, I thought, excitedly projecting the thought toward her. How? Hiding, she sent back. Delvers. The impressions were laced with the idea of hiding in a hollow of stone, trying not to be seen by a predator that prowled nearby. I sent you home, I said to her. You equal home, she sent back, picturing us together. Then she added something to the image, projected into my mind. A version of her in my arms, but now with eyes and a smiling mouth plastered on her front. They looked like they'd been drawn on with a marker. She didn't quite understand what eyes and a smile were for in human terms, but she seemed to sense that this expression indicated contentment, happiness, home. She didn't live in a cave. She lived with me, wherever I was. I felt like an utter fool. I'd vanished into the nowhere holding Doomslug, a cytonic creature that had evolved to avoid the attention of Delvers, and then my father's pin had immediately shown up in my pocket. And I'd been told by more than one person that cytonic people could change how they appeared in here. If a person could, well, why not a slug? You look like my pin, I sent her.
Special, she said, very pleased. We are special to hide.
Still, I said. You didn't have to follow me in here. She sent back comforting emotions and the image of me being chased by a predator. She'd been worried about me, so she'd come with me, but had hidden herself. I hadn't been communing with my father's soul. She was the one who had been supporting me all this time. The familiar mind that had lent me strength in resisting the Delvers. I felt an enormous wave of gratitude. And relief, actually, that she wasn't my father's soul. It wasn't that I didn't love him, it was just that, well, there had been something unnerving about that thought. I could see that I'd substituted the familiar feeling that came from Doomslug with something I wanted, which I now realized I didn't want at the same time. This made way more sense, though, I had buried her. She made a distinctly annoyed fluting sound. Sorry, I whispered, chagrined. I didn't know it was you. I got an indignant fluting in response. No, I won't bury you again, I said. But you could have told me. She sent me fright. Fear of the Delvers, who had been nearby, watching for her kind. She'd come in here with me, but had deployed her camouflage out of fear. After that, she'd been comfortable riding in my pocket, enjoying the sensation of this place, was that right? When in the nowhere, her kind just liked to snuggle down and absorb the nowhere radiation. Less slug, more sea cucumber, maybe? This was what she did every time she traveled through the nowhere during hyperdrive jumps, because of the Delvers. It was why starships traveling via slug were so much safer than ones using cytonic people.
Can't leave, she sent me.
Since we weren't in the light burst, she was locked into the belt like I was. Other than that, she seemed content to be back with me, though I again had to promise I wouldn't bury her. I wasn't certain how much she understood. I'd always seen her as an animal before, but in here I felt like I could understand her better.
You talk smarter now, she sent to me,
though it wasn't words, but I interpreted them that way. I've been practicing, I said to her, with my powers. You think it's working? You understand me?
Smarter talk,
she said with a fluting approval, and a reality ash dropped from her. Wait, I said, pinching it between my fingers. What are these, anyway?
Poop,
she said. I blinked, but okay. I quested deeper into the meaning of what she'd sent. She thought it was the same thing as, well, poop. But it wasn't. Her powers linked her to the somewhere, and that pulled through a little reality. A kind of crust. I rubbed the ash between my fingers and thought maybe I understood. Like fragments formed around holes between dimensions, these ashes formed around creatures that bridged the two dimensions. Actually, hadn't I been told that being near a fragment helped people keep their memories? Was that because, in essence, the small bits of new rock growing on the fragments were reality ashes? Well, people were starting to notice me kneeling there beside the wall. So I took the pin that was Doomslug in one hand, the Shorehold icon in the other, then held that one up. Hey, I said to them, you all missing something important? That caused a ruckus, of course. I settled down in a chair to wait as people rushed over. Maxime called for Peg, and it took her less than 5 minutes to come charging in. There, she reverentially reached down and cradled the stuffed animal.
How? She said. Your special talent?
I nodded. Tell me, do you know what these really are? The Tenasai captain clutched her icon, then glanced at the rest of the pirates. Finally, she waved for me with one meaty hand.
Let's chat, Spin, she said, in private.
The other pirates gave us space. Together, Peg and I left the chamber and entered the hallway outside.
It was my secret escape plan, she said softly as we continued walking. I hid a Tanix, a hyperspace slug, in my things when I entered. Took me an embarrassingly long time to realize that the stuffed toy in my luggage, my childhood favorite, but which I'd thought I'd lost years before, was indeed the same thing.
So the other pirates and workers don't know? I asked. She shook her head.
The icon is already valuable enough. Don't want them getting the idea that it might be able to hop them back to the somewhere.
It can't, I said. Not while it's in the belt.
You're sure?
Reasonably. But I guess all of the slugs can hide themselves as objects.
Nope, Doomslug said in my head. Only the yellow-blue ones.
That was conveyed by a picture of herself. There are other kinds? I asked.
Tons.
Right. Okay, then. Peg continued walking, thoughtful, so I kept pace with her. We soon left the barracks and entered a courtyard between several buildings. Inside it stood three trees. They were about 3 meters tall, with extremely stout limbs and very few leaves. From the branches grew fruit, like actual fruit. Lots of it, in a variety of colors, shaped kind of like upside-down pears. Peg walked to one tree and inspected it. Then she selected a cherry orange fruit and pulled it off. She walked over and presented it to me.
A mullein, she said, for bravery. I'd hoped to have grown a few, and I have.
I balked. So, do these trees really
grow fruit based on how we Tenasai feel?
Peg said.
Yes. My soul is bound to this tree. I was allowed to carry a new sapling with me, grown from my old tree, when I entered. Many of us believe that the fruit contains our emotions and makes us able to be calm in battle. I find that to be a lie, or at least an exaggeration, but the bond is real.
That made it even stranger to take the fruit as she forced it upon me.
It is your reward, she said. Please, honor me.
So I took it. Do I eat it? She laughed.
Not usually. Planted. You won't bond to it like a Tenasai, but, well, having that tree will be recognized by others of my kind. as an honor.
Well, that was cool. I was glad I didn't have to eat it. Though in the past I'd made a few cracks about feasting on the blood of my enemies, that was completely metaphoric. I put the fruit and Doomslug's pin in a pocket. Peg turned back to the tree and drew her lips to a line, not baring teeth, not threatening, instead content and happy. It just feels so odd, I said. Everything else about your people, Peg, seems about, well, being predatory, aggressive.
No, not aggressive, she said. Merely growing a better future by making the next generation strong. We test, we push, we prove.
And trees relate to that how?
Not at all, Peg said. Why should they? Humans are terrifying conquerors, but you have art, don't you?
I suppose we do, I said. Even during the war for survival on Detritus, we'd made sculptures and statues. People couldn't help it.
We evolved with these trees, Peg said. We care for them, and they provide fruit for us. Aggression and killing are always about life. Life for yourself, for your kind. My people have forgotten.